Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Gail Teeter and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information about our show, please see our website at azpodcast.azurewebsites.net. Well, welcome to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 5. We're going to talk about infrastructure as a service. As always, my name is Sujit Mello. I am a consultant, app dev consultant with Microsoft, based out of New Jersey. And as always, on Skype, I have my colleague, Cale Teeter. Cale?
Hi, Sujit. Yeah, my name is Cale Teeter. I'm also an MCS consultant in the New York region. Focused on application development and Windows Azure applications. And as a special treat here today, we have a special guest, Evan Vasilek. He's a senior support escalation engineer with Microsoft. So, Evan, if you want to give a little background.
Yeah. So, as Cale said, my name is Evan Vasilek, and I helped supported SQL Azure for a long time, helped launch the support model for that. And then about 6 months ago, I moved down to Windows with IaaS going general availability and have been having great fun learning how to support IaaS.
Awesome. So good to have you, Evan. And Evan's going to go ahead and chime in on some of the stuff we're talking about here today, specifically about when we're talking about the internals here of IaaS. So one of the things we want to start talking about here is what exactly is infrastructure as a service. So this is a service that we came out with after launch. So we had our platform as a service initially, and this was something that came along sometime after that. And when you think about it, you should think about, you know, what we have from a virtualization platform. So we had Hyper-V that runs, you know, on premise. And when you think about infrastructure as a service, you need to think about the same thing, but in a Microsoft hosted and managed environment. So it's almost literally the same thing, except we're running up in the cloud. So this is something that's more close to what customers are comfortable with from a standpoint of they're used to managing servers, they're used to having hardware there, and as the virtualization came along, they gravitated toward that, and so now we have an offering in the cloud to support that model as well. So Sujit, maybe you could run through some of the basics of what's available with IaaS and what kind of gaps it kind of fills.
Sure. Thanks, Cale. Yeah. So as Cale mentioned, you know, we talked about PaaS in a previous episode, and PaaS has it's kind of a restricted model in the sense that you can't do everything you want to. It limits what you can do on the VMs that you host your PaaS infrastructure. So if a customer needs total control of their environment, then they need something like infrastructure as a service, or IaaS as we call it. And some of the use cases are, you know, if you have a very complex application that has very complex setup, it's not really easy to set up in a PaaS environment. You've got custom software that has to be installed, maybe Windows services, things like that, that are required for your application to run. And you don't want to have to rewrite them in the PaaS model, then that's another reason why you'd use IaaS instead. Another common use for IaaS is for running a SQL server on a sort of a dedicated VM, because if you have special performance needs and you want to have a beefed up virtual machine that is running SQL Server to be able to meet your demands, you could put that up on IaaS. And then, you know, if you have third-party software, maybe SAP or other CRM software that is, you know, not supported in the multi-tenant Azure environment, then you could run it in IaaS. BizTalk is another example, although we're now slowly starting to roll out BizTalk services, and we'll cover that in a future episode of this podcast. Now, you know, one of the reasons people look at Azure to host their VMs is to save costs, to save money. And, you know, Evan, I think you might be in a good position to help us out here. You know, what are the costs involved for hosting VMs in IaaS?
Yeah, so that's a good question, Sujit. So with IaaS, right, you have the ability to be very flexible about what you do, but at the same time, that means that your costs could be very flexible as well. You pay when the VM is started. You pay for the storage of the VHD. You pay based on your size, both from a CPU and a memory perspective. We do have a Azure calculator, which you can use to go estimate what your costs are going to be. But one of the things that a lot of customers forget is that there's ongoing kind of embedded support costs, right? You have to go out and patch the OS level. And we cover your security patches and whatnot, but, you know, you're going to have to go out and add whatever patches on top of that. In addition, you need to maintain availability sets. If you need highly available resources like SQL Server, you need to have two SQL servers up if you want to always have one at one time, because our SLAs don't come into play when you have single instance VMs. And that kind of touches on why this scenario is useful, right? You have the ability to control your costs, but you're not always going to be looking for just a cost benefit. For example, you could imagine a scenario where you want to spin up a bunch of VMs, do some testing, and then spin them back down. That may ultimately be more expensive than, you know, having these old ancient machines sitting in your data center that you can use whenever you want, but you don't have the flexibility to spin them up and do whatever you want to them, right? You got to get in line to use them behind somebody else. They're also great for spinning up apps that don't have some public-facing aspect, right, where you want somebody to go remote into them and do some work around them. You have the ability to run SharePoint in this environment. You can do ADFS. You can do Linux. Basically, whatever you want on these VMs, they're just a VM and install. Now, you do need to be careful that what you install is a supported configuration. We've had lots of customers call and say, hey, I installed fill-in-the-blank software, and you go look at our documentation, that's not a supported configuration. In addition, and I'll throw this out because I recently just spent a good chunk of time the last week or so working with a customer on this, you need to be aware of these IaaS VMs are stateful, right? So if you go and let's say you use your IP address for your ADFS server and you have a public DNS pointing to it, and then you deallocate that ADFS server because you want to save some money for a little while, and then you spin it back up, well, that IP address changes. In this case, the customer had an external DNS pointing to that, and until the new IP address replicated all around, they were down for that period of time. So that little attempt to save some money ended up costing them a lot of downtime when they needed to run it. So, Kale, those are some of the cost areas and some of the potential pros and cons and pitfalls. What about managing these servers? I mean, what options do I have for that?
Yeah, thanks, Evan. Yeah, there's quite a bit of tools that we have around these kind of things. So one of the easiest ways is when you go up to our management portal, it's very easy to spin these up using some of the pre-built templates we have up there. So we have things not just that have our server OS running on it, but we have things that have prepackaged SQL already installed on it. So you can look at our gallery up there. It's ever evolving, so it's always changing, but there's already some prepackaged VM built up there. The other thing you can do is save your own images. So you could build your stuff locally. You could maybe install your server, install whatever other software that you need on top of it, maybe even sysprep it, and you can take that thing up to Windows Azure and use it then. You can, like I said here, you can create the images locally and upload. Some of the more advanced scenarios we see are using something like System Center. So we have a lot of tooling around System Center and integration to Azure that's, again, evolving. So we have things like backup, but beyond that, how to manage your VMs so that we can manage our on-premise VMs in the same pane of glass that we're managing our Windows Azure VMs. And also we have the monitoring and alerting. So we have some new tools in there that have just come along recently to put these monitors and alerts in place for you to make sure you can keep tabs on what's going on up there. So, Sajid, one of the things also is maybe we could talk about some of the things that how do you use these VMs effectively, maybe some of the tips and tricks to do that.
Yeah, sure. Just a couple of points I wanted to make before we get into that regarding the OS licenses that, or any application server licenses, you have to the customer is responsible for maintaining those licenses, making sure they're up to date and they're paid for because Microsoft doesn't really monitor that in any way. That's one thing to keep in mind. Microsoft's just hosting your environment. It's not keeping a track of all your licensing needs. And the other thing, Kale, I believe we can use PowerShell, right? You know, for scripting a lot of these things, especially with the VMs. Is that something that we added recently?
Yeah, definitely. We have the PowerShell commandlets to basically allow you to create do all the basic functions you would think about, you know, creating these things, starting, stopping, all the different pedigree things that we do with these types of things. One other thing I wanted to mention about the cost thing, and I had a question, Evan, was about the cost of these VMs. I know in the past when we did stuff on IaaS up in Azure, the cost calculation. So if we started a VM up there, we ran it, and if we just stopped it, are we charged for that if it's sitting there stopped but still deployed, or what, do we have to undeploy it in order to avoid costs? What's the scenario there?
Yeah, so you actually must be reading my mind, Kel, because I was thinking of both a neat trick for managing exactly that scenario, right? So that can be very expensive if you don't deallocate your VMs. We will continue to charge you. And now, if you look out in the portal and PowerShell, there's a stop deallocate option. But the question then comes up from people. You know, I was talking earlier about the customer who had some downtime because their VIP changed because they deallocated their VMs and they didn't have any more VMs in the hosted service. The trick that I recommend for a lot of people is to avoid that cost, right? Because you want to minimize your cost, is put an extra small VM in your cloud service on top of whatever, you know, your actual workload VMs are. Then always leave that VM running. It's minimum cost, but it guarantees that you never lose your VIP while still reducing your overall cost.
Very nice. Very nice, Chip. And just to give you an idea of costs, it's like $30 a month, you know, to keep a VM running, an extra small VM. So this is not terribly expensive.
Yeah, not a bad savings for trying to avoid some downtime, huh?
Absolutely, yeah. Now, Evan, so you're, you know, I think you introduced yourself, you're a senior support escalation engineer, mm-hmm. and I'm sure you've pretty much seen or heard every possible problem that customers have had using Azure. Is there one or two that maybe comes to the top of your mind that you'd like to share with our listeners?
So one that I saw recently, and this is more something just, it sounds like a really good idea until you go do it, is I love the idea of ADFS in Azure, right? Very few people really want to do ADFS for ADFS's sake, right? They want to do ADFS for O365. So people like to put it out in Azure. There's lots of capabilities for that. But the one thing you want to make sure is if you federate your Azure subscription with ADFS, right, think about it. So if you federate with ADFS, and that means in order to log into the portal, your ADFS server needs to be running. But if something happens to your ADFS server, you can't log into the Azure portal to fix your ADFS server, which isn't running. So the tip here, and really the learning here, is always make sure you keep at least one account in your as a co-admin for your subscription that's not part of your core federation, right? Be it a live ID, be it an account from another organizational ID, whatever it is, just something that you can use in case something happens to your ADFS server.
Mm. Nice tip. Thank you. Well, that's really good. I mean, I'm glad, you know, Evan, you could join us today and give us some of your real-world knowledge over there. In closing, as we typically do, I just want to give you guys a few updates and maybe a couple of other links. Everything's going to be in the show notes, of course. But something that's hot off the press from today, today's a big day for the Visual Studio team at Microsoft because they officially launched Visual Studio 2013. And along with that launch came something called Visual Studio Online, which is essentially a sort of a simplified version of Visual Studio that runs in any browser, any modern browser. And why that's important to you, Azure listeners, is that if, you know, we talked about the Azure websites in a past episode, and now using this browser, you know, hosted Visual Studio IDE, you can actually directly from the browser, from your portal, you can go in there and you can open up the code for your website, for your Azure website, and edit it right in the browser itself. You don't have to check out the code. You don't have to download it to your computer. You don't have to use WebMatrix or Visual Studio on your laptop. If you're making relatively simple changes and updates or adding some simple functionality, you can now do it directly in the browser using this new Visual Studio Online feature, I'm really excited about it. I'm going to try that out in the days to come, because that's something that I've been looking forward to. And then a couple of other links that I wanted to share with you. The one is regarding our Windows Azure Active Directory, which is something that I'm sure we're going to cover in a future episode. We call it WAD, just because it's easier to say. And there's a link that I'm going to share with you guys. It's a blog on how you could create and manage multiple WADs basically in Windows Azure. So we'll share that out with you guys. And then another tip that actually relates very much to our virtual machines, and Kale and Evan, you guys may have seen, I'm sure customers have asked you this question before, is, you know, when you have a VM set up exactly the way you want to in Windows Azure, and now you want to replicate that VM, you want to create 10 copies of it with different machine names, how do you do that? And Evan, have you ever worked on that, on this capture facility?
I've seen some customers use it, and they use it very successfully. I personally haven't done it, but it sure gives some great capabilities to, like you said, replicate what you're doing without having to repeat the work.
Exactly. So, you know, you create your VM with all your custom software, and now you need 10 copies of it. Obviously, the machine names have to be different, and some of the other information in Windows to give each machine a unique identifier has to be there. So you use the sysprep tool together with this capturing facility in Windows Azure. Go to the portal, and there's a link that explains you how to do that. So that's something I want to leave with you guys, and I guess that's the end of our show today. I want to, big thank you to Evan for joining us today and sharing his insights. And Kale, as always, great to have you on the show as well. So we'll see you guys next week. Thanks. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use the comments section of the website at easypodcast.azurewebsites.net. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.